This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
What in the world has happened? What are you doing?
I've cut myself shaving every day this week. And so, again, now I get some water on it. Look at this. It's been brutal.
Seriously?
Yeah. Sorry, man.
Pack.
I know.
I mean, have you forgotten how to shave?
No, I haven't forgotten how to shave. I just don't pay attention. So I keep cutting myself, but unfortunately, nearly the same spot. So it's right there. I'll get it off at some point in time. There it is.
Yeah, but it's a good thing we don't have a big show with lots of you know, important topics or anything to talk about.
Listen, you know what? I simply don't care. I'm the anti-TV guy. It's like, yeah, whatever. We're just going to go with it, man. Let's do it. All right. We got serious news to get to if I don't bleed to death on the show. But yesterday, Wes, as soon as we said goodbye to everybody, word got out that
10:05.
10:05, as it normally is. Really big, humongous news. I went within the ACC, but really for college athletics, because one of the true power brokers, the movers and shakers, we always talk about the smart guys in the room. Well, this is one of the smart guys in the room. John Swofford announced his retirement plans, and he'll go through the 2021 season, which will be 24 years as the commissioner of the conference. But what he did as a player, as an athletic director at North Carolina, the influence he's had, not only on this league, but really college athletics, this is a huge story. And we wish the commissioner the very best as he and Nora chill out and enjoy life after. He's got still got some business to attend to, obviously. And we'll talk to the commissioner next hour. But this was a really big story that broke yesterday.
Yeah, it was, and it's certainly already kind of developed into crafting legacies and things of that nature. And I'm sure the commissioner will tell us that it's important to finish strong too, because. But I do think he wanted to be transparent that this was his last year. And as he said in his statement to the ACC yesterday, this is something I think he and Nora have been thinking about with their children and that kind of thing. And, he's done an incredible job here. I don't think anybody really understands how turbulent college athletics has been in these 20 some years. And for that reason alone, he should be applauded, because the ACC went from being regarded as just a basketball league, quite frankly, in the early 90s with the addition of Florida State, who was a dominant football program, to now a league that is comprehensive, not only at the biggest events, but it's also comprehensive in its success off the field and off the floor as well. And John Swofford and his staff and the legacy he leaves behind is going to be one of historical proportion from the ACC, because when the league, was born, when John Swofford took over, it was a 9-team league with Florida State and Gene Corrigan, as we talked about when he passed away last year, Packett. You know, when Florida State was brought in this league, that was not an easy decision. Well, neither was the decision to go from 9 to 12 or 12 to 15. But those were things that had to be done. And it's ironic. We were talking yesterday at the close of the show that a year ago we had been in the commissioner's office doing our SiriusXM show, right? And remember what he said in that room was when we started talking about, when you're in those meetings, what's the most important thing to do? And he said, listen. And I thought, man, is that not a perfect example? Because it reminded me of something that Mike Slive had told me when he was the commissioner of the SEC and others in those positions. If you're a good listener, you give yourself a chance to be successful. And, and that's the first thing that popped in my head. What a good listener he has been for the ACC for 24 years in the decision-making process. And at times, the decision-making process that is historical to the success of this conference, for sure.
Well, expansion really is the key here, because I know that if John Swofford didn't have the insight in the sense that, hey, we got to make a move here, I don't think the ACC is existing anymore. Because if you don't add the markets that were added from a football perspective, from this ACC network perspective, from really the change of where it was going, you were getting ready to get plucked. And guess what? There were other Power 5 leagues that were looking around going, man, we would love to have some of those assets in the ACC. So John Swofford, and again, this is not an easy thing to do, to sit there and say, you know what, we got to go take care of business, and he did. And given the fact that this has always been a great, great basketball league, right? Great basketball league, still is, where football was now coming, and the ACC certainly struggled. Let's be honest. The early part of this century, the ACC struggled for a long, long time this side of Blacksburg, Virginia.
Right.
Florida State, it was at the tail end of the Bowden run. Clemson was still just okay, but not the Clemson that you know it. But Virginia Tech was carrying it. But the league had to get stronger in football. And to do that delicately in a basketball mindset where you knew that, hey, you've got to add pieces here, because if not, the league was gone. The league was gone. And I also think the grant of media rights was a stroke of genius. There'll be a lot of things that we'll talk about that John Swofford did and had the ability to again, politically navigate through some really unsettling waters. That was not an easy thing to do, that delicate balance of the egos of what basketball is all about, but yet here comes football and you got to deal with it and you've got to get better from a facility standpoint, coaches, you name it. He has lived some, and I can't wait to read his book because he's got to write a book. He and Jim Delaney need to get together and write a book because they were really, and along with the late, great Mike Slive, were the real power brokers of establishing the college football playoff. The mindset of, hey, listen, we need to now take this to another level. So there are so many things that John Swofford has had some piece of in terms of influence, not only from a national perspective, but obviously from an ACC perspective. An incredible run. Again, 24 years at the end of his run next year, and we can't wait to get him back on the show here next hour. But, I mean, just think about what we've been through from an ACC basketball, sports, academic landscape just a century. I mean, it's crazy to think of what it looked like in 1997 when he took over versus where we are today.
Exactly. And John Swofford will join us at 9:15. We look forward to that visit on this Friday. And Commissioner's always been a great supporter of not only us, but also the network. And we're looking forward to our visit with him. I think expansion is probably going to be the first thing a lot of people want to talk about here, Mark. And we can go the 9 to 12 move or the 12 to 15 move. But for just the circumstance here of talking about the expansion, I think the 9 to 12 move was the one that really, really kind of rocked what this was going to be, you know, because a lot of people thought the ACC when it was at 9 was going to be in really good shape. Yeah, maybe you had a 10th somewhere down the road. But to think about adding, you know, three schools in the early 2000s under the threat of plate tectonic shifting in college athletics and to be able to come away with Miami, Virginia Tech, and Boston College, I thought was really, really strong on behalf of the league.
Well, it had to be done. I mean, a lot of folks, when all that was going down, Wes, let's be honest, the old guard ACC fan was like, what? Boston College? Miami? All right, Virginia Tech's in the neighborhood. What are we doing? I mean, there were a lot of people that thought, man, the league, John Swofford's lost his mind, right? What are they doing? Again, the genius of the move was you understood what was coming. Because if you didn't do it, I'm telling you, the league is done. The league as we know it would have been absolutely picked apart by other pieces around the country. And that was a sheer genius move. And again, you know, if Commissioner was sitting in with us right now, he would downplay it, I'm sure, because that's his style, being understated. And again, as you mentioned, being smart, likes to listen, and being very guarded with any kind of answer until you really do your homework. And that's really his consistency and what he's really established in the room, being able to read that room. And again, I think when you have all the great leaders, that's what they do, right? I mean, I think of the late, great Mike Slive and Jim Delaney and folks who have really had an incredible influence on what college athletics looks like today. John Swofford's on that list, man. He's on a very short list. So the league's been very fortunate to have him for this amount of time. And I know there are a lot of people that would say, oh, my goodness, there were some decisions. I have no idea what he's doing. Well, now when you look back at it, without those decisions that granted the media rights, expansion, ACC network, the college football playoff, I mean, I can go on and on with 20 other things. You know, you've got to be a part of it. And not only was he a part of it, he created it.
Well, and also I remember, and I said this yesterday to some folks on radio, I remember last fall or last winter, rather, when he was talking to us about name, image, and likeness in the transfer portal, and immediately identifying that the NCAA was a reactive organization and that, you know, he was concerned about what NIL meant and what the transfer portal meant, and that we needed to put some more thought in this. And I thought there was some really forward-thinking things said then, too. And it shows you the understanding and the ability to kind of navigate the landscape and the uncertainty of college athletics. And here on his final run through the league, if you will, as announced yesterday, we're going to find out just kind of how college athletics is going to work, Mark. And in some respects, it's in some ways fitting, I think, that his last run through the ACC is going to be at the start of a year that could have a lot of uncertainty in it, simply because of the health and safety and the process and procedure and protocol. All these words are used towards organization of what college athletics is going to be, because kind of that's what he's done, is kind of find his way through that stuff in 24 years with the ACC.
And I'd also say there's still business to attend to. And I assure you that when we touch base with him next hour, name, image, and likeness is not going away. As a matter of fact, it's coming on like a freight train. And before he decides to go play golf and hang out with the grandkids, that is going to be something that's going to be a major, major issue. Up and above COVID-19, are we going to play? When are we going to play? How long are we going to play? What's the trickle-down effect on other sports, the Olympic sports, college hoops? There's still a lot of business to attend to for John Swofford in terms of on his watch. But, man, what an incredible run. And like I said, I can't wait when he writes that book, because he is going to have some amazing stories to tell.
Yep, no doubt about it. David Teal, who is a great friend of our program, now works for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, is going to join us in just a moment. Bronco Mendenhall at 9 o'clock, and the commissioner, John Swofford, will be here at 9:15. We're off and running. Friday edition of Packer and Durham continues right after this on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Bronco Mendenhall, Commissioner John Swofford, coming up in hour number two. But right now we bring on, from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, a guy that knows just about everything that's going on in the Atlantic Coast Conference. A guy that broke the story yesterday. That'd be David Teal. David, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Hope you're well.
We are. And so you jump on this story yesterday, and you, for the record, you and I had a conversation yesterday afternoon on our SiriusXM show, and you told me that you had a pretty good vibe that this was coming down the road, and lo and behold, here we go. John Swofford announces his retirement plans.
Yeah, it just seemed, Mark and Wes, that after the network launched and John's been on the job since 1997, as you guys have been discussing, a transformative, really almost quarter century at the helm of the ACC. And with the network launched, it just seemed that the time would be soon. So I don't think it came as a great shock. I think the question was timing. And the commissioner was gracious enough to talk to me at length yesterday afternoon. And one of the things he mentioned was that his original plan was to announce this at Amelia at the conclusion of the annual spring meetings in May. And, of course, they did not happen, which changed the timing.
David, it's interesting because this final run, and I just said this going to break, all the characteristics that we've come to know and kind of assume about John Swofford are going to be on full display here, because we don't know what's going to happen in the fall. All the procedure, protocol, all those type things have been discussed. But yet leading up to when we have this decision made and the flexibility, or as Mike Bray said, nimbleness that might be required to have this fall football and winter basketball schedule, it's interesting that to a person, the communication with the athletic directors, the teamwork of the collaborative effort of the presidents, the coaches have all talked about, you know, how well this league has communicated and stayed on the same page trying to get ready for this. And in a lot of ways, doesn't that speak to the characteristics that we've come to assume with Swofford?
Absolutely, Wes. You don't want to have crisis management, but John Swofford has excelled at it through the years. And here he is in the midst of his final test. Is it the way you would choose to exit? Probably not, but the way, perhaps, as you mentioned, it is fitting.
David, one of the most underrated aspects of his career, and again, we're talking as if, you know, he's already out in pasture, and I just want to keep emphasizing there's still a lot of work to be done if you're not only John Swofford, but all these other Power 5 commissioners. But I think one of the most underrated aspects of what he's accomplished was taking a basketball league when you knew football was coming, and you had to get better ASAP, or you're going to not only get left behind through expansion, football, and everything else, you may be picked apart and not even exist. And he was able to do that with a mindset of basketball, but understanding, hey, the future with football, we've got to be better. And that was not easy to do. A lot of folks just assume, oh, that's easy. You just pick up these schools. He can say that after the fact. But at the time, there were still people who thought, man, what are you doing? Miami, you know, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame. We go through the whole of Syracuse. What are these guys doing? He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yes, he did, Mark. And he knew it even coming from one of the most storied basketball schools in the country, the University of North Carolina. And he learned it from his predecessor at the ACC, Gene Corrigan, who dragged membership kicking and screaming during his tenure to add Florida State because of football. Gene Corrigan understood it. John Swofford, who got his start working for Gene Corrigan at the University of Virginia back in 1970, he knew it. And as you mentioned, there was some resistance, but he made it happen. And to his enduring credit, because without that expansion, there is no ACC network and there is no ACC.
David, I'm going to ask you a loaded question here. We talked about the move from 9 to 12 in our first segment. Is the move from 9 to 12 still the most definitive moment of the ACC under John Swofford?
Wes, I don't know, because, yes, it took the ACC on par with the SEC and the Big 12 in creating a football championship game. But I really think that in 2012, after Maryland blindsided the league by leaving for the Big 10, that was his greatest crisis. I did a radio show shortly thereafter in Kansas City where they're Big 12-centric, and they were talking about bringing Clemson and Florida State on board, and they asked me, will the ACC exist in a year? I mean, that was the talk. And he navigated those waters as superbly as anyone could have hoped.
You know, David, the other thing, too, is I think it all goes hand-in-hand. Expansion, I also think the grant of media rights is what really secured the fact that, you know what, you're not going to cherry pick anybody from the league. Because without that agreement, I think there was always going to be some speculation of whether the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12 would have made a move on some of the power schools and said, you know what, you guys would be a great addition for us. But being able to get everybody to agree to the grant of media rights in addition to expansion, again, I think it goes hand-in-hand. But without it, I don't know if the ACC exists. I really don't. And I think John Swofford gets all the credit for that.
Yes, he does. And Pack, you're right. It's all interconnected. Expansion, grant of media rights, network. Because without one, the others don't happen. Absolutely not.
David, if we kind of crystal ball this thing, his legacy here of expansion and the media rights and obviously the move to the college football playoff, I think his voice in the room, and Pac said this earlier, and I agree, the Mike Slive, Jim Delaney, John Swofford were the three principals at the table that morning in New Orleans following LSU, Alabama, that they got the college football playoff plan kind of pieced together. And I think that's one of the things that may not be thought of, you know, in the first couple of strokes about what John Swofford's done for this conference. But to make sure the ACC seat at that table was secure in a time when they had not been very prominent in the BCS, I think that was probably strong, too.
Wes, when the college football playoff was first created, and we all knew it was a four-team format with five power conferences, everyone talked about how the ACC is going to often be the league that is left out. ACC is not going to have a team in this playoff. ACC hasn't been left out yet. So, yes, especially Mike Slive and John Swofford with the creation of the CFP. Jim Delaney and the Big Ten, and especially Big Ten presidents, were very resistant because of their affiliation with the Rose Bowl.
It's also a changing of the guard, isn't it? Not only within the ACC, David, in college athletics. I mean, Jim Delaney for 30 years did a brilliant job with the Big Ten. They're making tons of cash. The success that they've had, their network's been out of sight. And now Kevin Warren takes over, who, by the way, was an outsider. Again, we keep talking about, you know, John Swofford, who's next. But when you take a snapshot of what other leagues have done, the Big Ten went out of pocket. I mean, they went completely out of the box. And I've not met or spoken to Kevin Warren, but I've really been impressed every time I've seen him interviewed or what he's had to say. Obviously, Mike Slive, the late, great Mike Slive. Internally, Greg Sankey was sitting there on his right-hand side. That was kind of a seamless transition. And now here's John Swofford. So, hey, yeah, you got Larry Scott, who's now the longest tenured Power 5 commissioner out the Pac-12. Bob Bowlesby, he's done a nice job with the Big 12, and a lot of folks thought they were going to get cherry-picked or, you know, tied into the Pac-12. And again, there's always speculation on expansion and what's next, but it is a true changing of the guard, per se, in the overall landscape of college athletics, of the real smart people in the room. The SEC with Sankey now, worn out the Big Ten, and the million-dollar question is going to be, what's next for the ACC after John Swofford?
Absolutely, it will be. And, Pat, you make a great point. Schools and conferences are more and more willing to look outside for lead administrators. I mean, Larry Scott ran the Women's Tennis Association when the Pac-12 hired him as its commissioner. You look at recent ACC athletic director hires. Syracuse plucked John Wildhack from ESPN. Notre Dame hired Jack Swarbrick from an Indianapolis law firm. So I think more and more this is what we will see, in large part because college athletics is such a massive business enterprise.
All right, David, I want to go back to earlier in the week when the ACC, ironically, ahead of this announcement, PAC, they announced the formation of a board of directors to run the conference. David, it is a group made principally, and I think they had to rewrite some of the bylaws in the conference here to get this done. But this is a body of folk who is principally CEOs, presidents, chancellors of universities. They are going to be essentially the oversight of the commissioner's office and the league. Is that what I'm to understand from the way that was worded in the release?
Yes, Wes, and it is exclusively the league's CEOs. I mean, the commissioner sits on the board, but then it's the other 15 presidents and chancellors. And Commissioner Swofford and I talked about that yesterday, and the way he explained it was the presidents won't necessarily be more involved on a daily basis, but on a more frequent basis, especially, I think, as it pertains to NCAA matters.
I don't think
how does that impact the next commissioner?
I think it will impact the choice of the next commissioner because, yes, the ACC bylaws require that the next commissioner be approved by 3/4 of the presidents, which if you do the math is 11.25, so you round up, you'll need to have 12. And I think they are going to exclusively run this search. There will probably be a firm involved, but this is going to be done at the highest levels of the league, and the chairman of the board is the Syracuse chancellor, Kent Severud, and the vice chair is the president of Duke, Vincent Price.
Not that we're going to get crazy with speculation because everybody's got a list, but what will be interesting about that board is there could actually be people in the room that want the job.
Jim Clements? Right? I mean, I mentioned him in my speculative story. Others have mentioned him. Pack, you know the lay of the land of Clemson far better than I. That's your alma mater. But he's very involved in athletics. He seems to have an affection for the ACC. And we'll see how it all plays out. And if Jim Clements isn't involved, there's no active athletic director in the league who's been in the league longer than Dan Radakovich at Clemson, who previously was the AD at Georgia Tech.
All right, David, let's talk about then, because everybody's going to want to spend a little bit of this in speculation and think about familiarity to it. The historical landscape of the ACC, there's never been a commissioner, John Swofford being the fourth in the league's history, that did not have some tie to the league in one form or another. Jim Weaver was the athletics director at Wake Forest when he was the first commissioner. Bob James, who followed him while coming from the Big Eight, and the MAC, had been a student athlete at the University of Maryland. Gene Corrigan, of course, a Duke graduate who coached at Duke, later an athletics director at Virginia, and everybody knows John Swofford, football player at North Carolina, Morehead Scholar, AD at Chapel Hill, worked for Corrigan at Virginia, among other stops. You sense that the landscape of this hire could be entirely different than history says, though?
I think it could, but that's not to say, Wes, as you well know, that there is some dearth of candidates who have those ACC ties. You look at Michael Kelly, who worked for Commissioner Swofford at the ACC, then went to the College Football Playoff, and is now the athletic director at South Florida. Bernadette McGlade, who's commissioner of the Atlantic 10. She worked under Commissioner Swofford in Greensboro. Shane Lyons, the athletic director at West Virginia. I mean, we could go on. But there are plenty of folks around the country who have deep ACC connections.
This is going to be kind of a goofy question. How important is a football background in a league that's always showcased basketball, given the fact that the College Football Playoff contract ends coming up here in 5 or 6 years, and who knows where that thing's going to go in terms of expansion or, you know, the dollars that are going to be out there? I mean, who knows what the market's going to look like, but that's where visionaries need to have a really good handle. How important is a football background, David, do you think, for this gig moving forward?
Pac football accounts for anywhere from 70 to 80% of the revenue. And I don't mean to be trite, but do the math, right? If you don't have a deep football background, then you are going to have a deep appreciation for the sport and its impact on the enterprise. And if that's not in your wheelhouse, then this is not the job for you.
Yeah, it's a... This is going to be different, David, also from the aspect that college athletics, and we were talking about this in the opening segment, the landscape of this business is moving forward pretty fast, even in a pandemic here. I mean, there are a lot of things. We've had a lot of conversations in the last couple of months here. All the things that have happened here to expose, if you will, the books of certain universities and institutions as it relates to athletics shows you really just how much of a business this is. And all those characteristics and tendencies are starting to percolate, if you will, toward what the future of college athletics is. And all that's got to be held accountable. And not to dismiss the old coaches who were athletic directors back in the day, that's not the fit anymore. It's more the business skew than it is, you know, the old, hey, you know, go out and, you know, win one for old State U type deal.
Oh, No question. You better understand marketing, branding, media negotiations. It is very much an MBA wouldn't hurt. Let's put it that way.
Well, there's two things immediately moving forward. There's two things that I don't care if we're talking ACC, Pac-12, or anybody in between. The unknown of this upcoming college football season, and again, I'm an optimist. I think we are going to have a season. I don't know when and how long it'll be, but for argument's sake, the biggest word in sports is if. if we do not have a season, the impact it's going to have on every single institution in this country moving forward is monumental in terms of not only the sport of football, but the trickle down effect to all your Olympic sports, basketball, you name it. That's issue number one. And then you have name, image, and likeness. And David, you mentioned the whole branding and marketing aspect of it. This is a game changer. This is going to change and alter whether we have a football season or not, name, image, and likeness. And guess what? It is going to happen in 21. Now, it's going to be important for the institutions to have their act together because it's coming. And so whoever is the next person in the ACC, much less the other four power brokers in college athletics, it is a totally different universe that we're getting ready to jump into in terms of the 2021 calendar and beyond. It's a fascinating time for all of us, quite frankly.
NIL is coming, Pack. It's coming at the January 21 NCAA convention. And just look what happened in Florida. Where did Governor DeSantis sign state's NIL bill? On the campus of the University of Miami, an ACC institution. Mm. I thought the symbolism there was powerful.
Yep, I agree.
All right, DT, before we let you go, it's been fun, you know, kind of in a unique way during the pandemic to see everybody's backgrounds here and kind of where they're talking to us from and things like that. We noticed during the commercial break that you might have committed a theft at the Greensboro Coliseum. Do we need to, Pack, do we need him to go pull that back so we can have a look at that? You know, need to go get that, Teal, real quick. Look, what in the world? Look, I mean, seriously, look at this. Look, come on, really? What in the world? I mean, you're a Hall of Fame writer, Teal. You're a legend in this business. What are you doing?
You know, I can say one thing.
They know you have that?
I can say one thing here. The last time I drove through Guilford County after the tournament, I noticed all these pictures of Teal on milk cartons, on the banks, and everything else. Now I know there's probably a warrant out for his arrest for ripping off this. You can't rip stuff off like that, Teal. I mean, I know you're a Hall of Famer, but you don't have the right to do that. I'm sorry.
That's your limitations, guys.
Oh, okay. Of course, I say that with the 1974 NC State Maryland tape from C.D. Chesley sitting right here behind us, which, by the way, we are really, really now pressed for time to negotiate with Billy so we can get this in the hands of Commissioner Swofford before he decides to play golf every day.
Hey, David, thank you. Appreciate it as always. Always appreciate you taking time to do this. Best of your family, and we'll see you soon, my man.
Same guy, and I apologize for bringing down the cumulative GPA of your guest today with Coach Mendenhall offered to follow.
Oh, man. That's why he's the best. David Teal. You can find him at @ByDavidTeal. And, of course, on Richmond.com, the site of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We appreciate his time here on Packer and Durham on this Friday morning. All right, when we come back, Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, had some interesting comments about basketball. We're kind of moving on. The NCAA wants to talk about maybe what basketball will look like coming up. We'll touch on that. Plus, over and under still to come, ahead of Bronco Mendenhall at 9 o'clock, John Swofford at 9:15. It's a busy Friday with Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the show. What's the problem with you, Durham? What's the problem? You got an issue?
I have no issues at all.
None?
No, none.
It's good.
Zero.
Appreciate David Teal, his insight, We got big guests coming up, hour number two. Bronco Mendenhall leads things off at the top of the hour. Head football coach of your Virginia Cavaliers, and of course the commissioner of the ACC, John Swofford, scheduled for 9:15.
Yeah. Dr. Mark Emmert, president of the NCAA, yesterday offered some comments about college basketball and what the schedule might look like. Had a fairly extensive quote, by the way, and quoting Dr. Emmert, basketball is a much more intimate game than football in the sense that you only have 13 scholarship players. If one or two student athletes come down with the coronavirus, then you're probably quarantining a whole team. Emmert went on to talk about the fact that you may have to say, look, we're going to stop playing for 2 weeks. He then says, well, if you started the season earlier and you've shortened the number of games, you could afford to have some disruptions and still get a full season in. Now, Mark, here's the story. We've been talking about football a lot and obvious reasons, right? When David Teal just mentioned the revenue aspect of it. Emmert's concerns about the differences in football and basketball, and I think you hit on this a couple of weeks ago. When we go indoors, at least from what we know about the virus and the health perspective here, it may change the dynamic a little bit. But I don't know that we've ever talked about backing the season up to start earlier to allow for stoppages. That was surprising to me in some respects, I think.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I learned nothing from Mark Emmert's quote. I'm just giving you my 2 cents worth here. You know, we've got to figure out football first. It starts with football, and then we will figure it out as we move on. Right now, today, on June 26th, we don't know the answer to that, Wes. So to make any comment regarding a basketball season, I know we had Mike Bray on the other day, and I thought what he said, hey, I'm never rooting for Notre Dame football more this year than I ever have because we've got to have football. Without football, all this other stuff we're talking about is on hold. So you can give me all the theories you want, starting it early, starting it late, 20-game seasons. I mean, you come up with 1,000 of them. Man, you just don't know the answer. And, you know, I go back to the smart people in the room again. You've already heard comments this week from the Power Five commissioners about, hey, how about if we push back the championship game at least 1 week? It gives us some flexibility if there's a stoppage of the football season. I don't even know how you have a conversation about hoops, even though I know you got to plan accordingly and have 15 different scenarios. But we got to walk before we run, right? And to walk, you've got to have a college football season. So for Mark Emmert at the NCAA to give me all that, that's terrific. I mean, you know, go back to the corner office and have another committee meeting. None of that mattered to me. It was just like, hey, forget hoops a second. I know you got to worry about scheduling it, but we got to get football up and running first. At least some kind of plan of semblance of what a season's going to look like. Whether it starts in the fall, maybe it's in the spring. I don't know how this thing's going to work out, but there are so many balls in the air right now, Wes. It's almost impossible to sit there and throw the dart and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. You just can't do it yet.
Well, I do think here's the one thing that if you're a college basketball fan and you're trying to look at a structure, look at what happened here in the last week alone. Kentucky Derby has said they're going to run in September, but they're going to run with limited fans, okay? New York City Marathon canceled. Big marquee neutral site events may happen, but they're going to happen in a different way. Pac, I can't, when I start to think of basketball before Christmas, I always think of these, you know, the Maui, the preseason NIT, the Champions Classic, all these different type things. Now, they don't have to make the decision on June the 26th by any stretch of the imagination, but at some point, they're going to have to make that decision. It might be September, it might be October, but I don't know how some of the neutral site stuff comes together. Now, Atlantis, all those type things, where people go as a vacation destination, and oh, by the way, there's a basketball tournament. You follow me on that? I just don't know how that looks in June or what it may look like when we get to August. But to your point, we got to get football up and going and get some kind of structure going before we worry about basketball happening.
I thought yesterday was a kind of a good news, bad news situation, and I do think it has an effect eventually on college athletics. And you just mentioned the Kentucky Derby is going to be September the 5th. I know we've kidded around about it, but they announced that not only are we having the event, but we're going to have limited spectators be able to show up and have a good time. The same day, you also had the National Football League announced that on August the 8th, the Hall of Fame game not happening. In fact, not only is that not happening, the enshrinement ceremony is not happening. So you had two major sporting events per se, because we're all waiting for football to get started, that you had a good news, bad news. And, you know, if you're college athletics, you're kind of stuck in the middle here, still not knowing exactly what the plan's going to be. You don't need to know on June the 26th. In a perfect world, you wish you did. But we may get to July 26th, Wes, and all of a sudden there could be a pressure. Who knows what the landscape's going to look like in terms of COVID-19 tests and positive tests and all these student-athletes now getting back on campus based on the NCAA now allowing practices to start in July. There is so much that is going to change between now and this time next month that you don't have to make that decision from a football perspective yet, even though we are in a critical 4 to 6 week stage. But as far as basketball goes, and this is where I'm going with Mark Emmert, like, hey, we'll get to you a second, just chill, we need to figure out football first. You can tell me there's 13 guys, say we're in the building, that's not a good thing if two guys get no kidding, of course that's the case. So I don't think you can worry yet about what the basketball landscape looks like in June until you can figure out football first. It's just my opinion.
Yep. All right. Those are at least the early statement from Mark Emmert about basketball. We'll keep an eye on that as we move forward. Now, Bronco Mendenhall going to join us at 9 o'clock. The commissioner of the ACC, John Swofford, who announced his retirement effective at the end of the 2021 athletic season, will join us at 9:15. But when we come back, a Packer and Durham staple. Over under on a Friday. Drew Brooks captains the Lumberjacks when we come back on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Packer and Durham.
Wes, we now head to Bristol, Connecticut, where that masked man, who was that masked man? That's him right there, Drew Brooks. Following protocol on the Bristol campus, wear your mask at all times.
We have three people in the control room today, which is the most we've had since February. So we're being safe in Bristol, bucolic Bristol, Connecticut.
It's a good look.
All right, so let's get to over-under.
We'll get to over-under. You don't want to mention the hat today that's going to be up on eBay at 10:01?
No, it's not.
First question for you guys. The shortest length, or tenure, I should say, for an ACC commissioner is 10 years. So over-under, the next commissioner of the ACC will have a longer than 10-year tenure.
Over.
Mm.
Over. I mean, unless they hire Billy Packer, then I'd go under. I'm going to say over.
I'll say over, but not by much. Not by much. I'd say, yeah, maybe half of John Swofford's run, 12 years. Who knows?
That would be over.
That would be over. Yeah, thank you. All right, let's move along. Packers getting ready to start down the math road. Here we go.
We're going to Louisville. Over under 3.5 straight players of the year for the Louisville women's basketball team. Dana Evans coming back.
Oh, Dana's a girl now. Let me tell you, she's been on the show 3 or 4 times. How are we not rooting for her? I'm going to go over. I'm going over. Dana's back. We're going over. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going over here, too. She's sensational. They're going to be really good again. Why wouldn't she be the best player on the best team?
Right.
So I'll go over as well.
All right, so far two overs, two questions. Third question, over under 12 quarterbacks in the conference that begin and end the season as the starter.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. I'm going under. Going under.
Is there a reason why you just decided to go under?
Well, I just think that we're talking about a couple schools that have A, injury, B, you got quarterback battles, and as solid as it looks, I mean, you just don't know. I mean, you know, Bronco Mendenhall's coming up at 9 o'clock. He's got a guy in Armstrong who's taking a lot of snaps, who has some reps. He's got Thompson, who transferred in from Mississippi State. I mean, that's a volatile situation. You, as solid as Hendon Hooker looks, you don't know. I mean, Burmeister, Patterson, they're all in the mix there too. You know, I can think about injuries, right? I mean, yeah. Just under 12, that's why I said under.
You sold me. Two schools, Georgia Tech and Virginia, unknowns. I mean, could have a couple guys until you figure it out. And you mentioned the injury part. And again, we're assuming that we're going to have a 12-game season. At least I am with that question. So I think you're right. I'll agree with you. You sold me on that. I'll go under as well. I like it.
All right. Okay. Another question, same answer. Let's see if we can change it up here. This is an interesting one here. Over under 2.5 football championships for Clemson before Florida State or Miami win another one.
Is this national championships?
Okay, clarity
national,
here.
National championships.
Hmm. All right, are we talking about 2.5 more?
Correct.
Yes. I'm going to say under just because it's hard to win one. As great as Dabo and his Tigers have been, they've won two. Now, granted, we're in two other national championship games. I just think it's hard to win them. I mean, how about the question of, hey, can they win more than 2.5 while Dabo's here would be probably a good question, too. I'm going to go under just because it's so hard to win one. How about that for an answer?
Before FSU or Miami win another. Yeah, I'll go over here because I think Clemson's up there where very few are. And as much as Florida State and Miami have unbelievable tradition, they've got to get back to that. And Clemson is prepared and is, you know, they've got the infrastructure that really only about two other schools in the country have to get it done. And that includes unbelievable depth on their football team. So I would say over.
So you think they can win three before Miami or Florida State wins one, is what you're saying?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just think they're at the level where Ohio State, Alabama are.
They are.
And then Pac, Miami and Florida State at this moment are not on the list of the next line of contenders, in my opinion. Doesn't mean they can't get there, but right now they're not of that next 3 to 5.
And by the way, let's also say something real quick with your statement. Ohio State, as terrific as they are, they haven't won a playoff game in 5 years and counting. So before I put Ohio State with Bama,
that's right,
who's won multiple, Clemson, who's won multiple, the Buckeyes and their program's great. I know there'll be Ohio State fans yelling at me as they normally are. You know, you haven't won a playoff game in 5 years and counting. Just saying. So just want to straighten that out.
Right.
All right, we have big 9 o'clock hour coming. Bronco Mendenhall standing by, John Swafford at 9:15. But we have to ask one more question for you, Packer. Over under 18 trillion yards for Sam Howell next season.
That's a push because that was the number. 18 trillion is a push. And Sam even confirmed it yesterday. He said it's on their board. Sam Howell said, Pack, you're right. 18 trillion is exactly what we've put on the board. So that's a push. That is truly the number. Give or take.
I'm gonna go under. Slightly. As much as I like Carolina on offense, I'm gonna go just under 18 trillion yards. Maybe 17 trillion. Unbelievable. All right,
good,
we'll take
man.
A break. Over and under. We don't do it nearly enough, and now you know why. Okay, Bronco Mendenhall, who has done a marvelous job at the University of Virginia. It's been a unique offseason. We'll talk to the head coach of the Wahoos when Packer and Durham on a Friday continues on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.